the road must have a code that you can live by, and so become yourself, because the past is just a goodbye. Teach your children well. Their father's hell did slowly go by, and feed them on your dreams, the one they picked, the one you know by.
Welcome to Education Now's March 28th edition. I am your host, Athena Melville, and I am very pleased and delighted to bring you the voices of Carolyn Feeney and Bethelyn Black for a focus on sustainable farms and their project, Coco Sand Sustainable Farm and Gardens in Contra Costa County, California. Coco Sand Sustainable Farm is a 33-acre urban farm on public land growing organic produce to provide salads for schools and fresh produce for the food bank at a very low cost and with a minimal carbon footprint. Carolyn Feeney is the founder and executive director of Coco Sand Sustainable Farm Project. She has a Ph.D. in research psychology from the University of California, Berkeley, and is a retired university scientist and teacher. Carolyn has been a community activist and organizer for 2 decades. She had the self-motivation, grit, and determination for 2.5 years to bring this project from inspiration through acceptance by the prestigious Earth Island Institute as one of their sponsored projects, and through concept approval by the board of the Central Contra Costa County Sanitation District. Dr. Feeney taught and conducted research at the University of Michigan, Ann Arbor, where she ran a large research laboratory and wrote many federal and foundation grants. She is closely connected to federal, state, county, and local elected officials, to school and college board members, and other leaders in the community, many of whom have already openly supported the farm. Dr. Feeney has extensive experience in the use of online social media. One of the groups she founded reaches as many as 500,000 people, and that group was the Michelle Obama fan page. Bethelyn Black, M.A., will be the farm manager, or as Dr. Feeney affectionately refers to her, our farm guru. She has a master's in ecology, agriculture, andragogy from New College of California. She has her certification in permaculture design and has completed the University of California's landscape architecture program. She is an adjunct professor at JFK University and Diablo Valley Community College. Bethelyn teaches soil science, integrated pest management, plant production, irrigation, introduction to horticulture, pruning, and horticulture therapy. She is arguably the top master gardener in the county and has taught beginning and advanced classes in botany, ethnobotany, rainwater harvesting, water conservation, small-scale urban farming, pest management, arboriculture, plant ID, landscape design, plant propagation, greenhouse management, vermicomposting, and soil management. Bethelyn has helped found and managed a 5.8-acre farm in Marin called the Indian Valley Organic Farm. This innovative organic teaching farm is a unique collaboration between the College of Marin, the Conservation Corps North Bay, and UCCE Extension in Marin. For more than 20 years, Ms. Black has been the owner and operator of a Woman's Touch landscape design and installation company specializing in regionally appropriate organic landscapes, emphasizing edibles and natives. She will work with local science teachers and experts to develop the classes taught on the farm and teach the docents, who will help with instruction. Bethelyn also works in the organic farming community and in the agriculture department at the University of California, Davis. And without any further ado, we will go to the interview. Enjoy, and I'll be back with you at the end for contact information. Hello and welcome to Education Now, Carolyn Finney. I'm so pleased to have you here for this podcast.
Thank you so much for the invitation to tell you about our wonderful farm.
Yes, I have told our listeners in the introduction all about you, that you're the founder and executive director of the Coco Sustainable Farm Project, and that you are you have your PhD in research psychology from the University of California, Berkeley, and you have just fabulous credentials. But the work that you have been doing and the project that you have set up, which is currently in process, is really so fantastic. And that's what I want to focus on in this interview on Education Now.
Thank you so much.
Yes. So that's very interesting to me. I would love to have you on just to talk about that sometime. And in terms of the agriculture and what it's done to this planet, I was told a long time ago by some wise old men in my life that, agriculture was, was when everything started going bad, when we started to domesticate animals, and basically agriculture and farming. Many people now look at the way of becoming sustainable as going back to the more hunter-gatherer lifestyle, even in diet. Many people are going back to that. I've read that the teeth of our ancestors who came from hunters and gatherers were really much better than ours, and that they probably lived a lot longer than we've been led to believe. So
I have to agree with you. I mean, completely. I think that I actually really like Michael Pollan's approach toward food, which is basically eat food, don't eat anything that has a word in it your grandmother couldn't pronounce.
Yeah.
I think that there's just, there's phenomenal wisdom. And just in terms of looking at, the animals that we are on the planet, where we've come from, and what we've done, I think eating fresh food that has not been shipped 5,000 miles, food that has not been in cold storage for 6 months before you eat it, is just, I think there's just great, great wisdom and great nutritional value in eating that way. And I don't think we're going quite back to this farm is not quite going to be doing the hunter-gatherer routine, but it does at least address the issue of having fresh local food available, which is, I think, something that many of us have just completely gotten out of touch with. I mean, if you were to look at the age of most of the produce on grocery shelves, it's fairly appalling.
Yes, it is. It is appalling, and there's a lot going around right now on Facebook about, if it came out of the ground, right, or out of the environment, eat it. If it was processed at all, don't eat it.
Yeah.
I felt that way for a long time.
I understand that. I also do know, however, I worked for Cooperative Extension for many years, and when you are there's if you're looking at the overall population, and it's just in California, when you start to get into people who are economically disadvantaged, they don't buy fresh food, period. They don't buy fresh fruit. They don't buy fresh vegetables. If you're looking at the dollar cost of buying food, it's cheaper to go to McDonald's. Not just land that, but any fast food place that has a dollar menu. So highly processed food, full of fat, full of salt, is cheaper than fresh food. So again, this is one of the reasons why this farm project just appeals to me so very
Hello? Oh, I lost you for a minute. Are you there?
I'm here.
Let me make sure that it's still recording. It is still recording. I don't know why it bleeped out for a minute, but it did bleep out for a minute. It is.
Go ahead.
It is so much the truth, what you're saying, that that so many people are eating this fast food that's not nutritious. But when you really look in these high poverty areas, you know, you find that in that area, the only thing available to you are these and these little stores that do not sell any fresh fruit or vegetables.
See you again.
So you have to go a long way to get that. And so that's why people started little farms in their backyards. And there was a woman actually in the Bay Area who was going around helping people start their gardens.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in those areas. Because it's not because they don't know it's better for you. It's not because they don't really want a salad. It's because where they'd have to go to get that food is so far away from them, because what we have done as a culture is provide them with a little store, and I won't use any names, on a corner that does not sell fresh fruits and vegetables, let alone anything that's organic, and all of these fast food chains.
But let me throw a little one. I know the program you're talking about in Oakland, it's a fabulous program that puts in backyard gardens.
Yes.
But let me put a little caveat on this. If you have a backyard garden in Oakland, you are paying city water prices to grow vegetables. And vegetables need water almost every day in the summertime in our dry Mediterranean climate. When you look at the cost of growing vegetables in your backyard, it is so much cheaper to go to, you know, go to any one of the big box stores or any store anywhere and buy your produce. It is expensive to pay for city water to grow vegetables. It is not economic. Now, there are a lot of other reasons to do it. It's much better for you nutritionally. It's much better for the environment, but it does not make economic sense.
And it's much better for you. It's much better for you as an individual, because not only are you getting exercise and fresh air, but you're having a relationship with the plants. Small is beautiful. I don't know if you've read that book, but it feeds into that as well. And I love what you're doing and the concept there that's happening there. But I really love the idea of a backyard garden. I think you get a lot more from a backyard garden than you can put down in terms of economics.
I've been growing almost all of my own food for probably the last 30 years.
Uh-huh.
So I have a very, very, very productive back garden, and I believe in this absolutely. And for 13 years, I ran the Master Gardener Program here in Contra Costa County, where I really strongly advocated edible landscaping. And if you're going to pay for the water for plants anyway, you might as well get food out of it.
That's right.
But I also know, I would tell you, I think it's a middle-class luxury. I think when you have no money, you don't have the money to pay for, these are often people who are living in areas where they don't have any landscaping at all because the cost of paying for the water is so high. Community gardens can address that to a certain extent, but community gardens end up into doing the sort of square foot gardening, intensive gardening that you could do, so you could have a 4-by-10-foot plot and have that in production. And that can produce, a fair amount of food for people. It's not going to be an alternative altogether. What I love so much about this project is we are using, again, this is the material we're going to have, the food we're going to have coming off of this farm. It's going to be coming out at using local resources, and it'll be affordable, and we'll be getting really fresh food to do. Now, our community garden will have the plots there for people who, with that recycled water, who do want to be able to grow food. So we're hoping to address that need as well, so that people don't have to pay for city water personally.
Right.
But I completely agree with you. I'll tell you, if I had to lose my yard and my garden, I would be devastated.
Yeah.
It gives you so much
psychologically, too. It gives so much to a person. And they know now that children who live where there's dirt you know, where there's actually the dirt, that they reap benefits from it in terms of their health. I mean, it's so there are so many things. I have been growing in containers since I moved to a very small space and enjoying it completely. And you can even get self-watering containers, you know, if that, and which will help conserve, you know, on the water. And of course, so many people are not allowed to compost, even if it's no meat scraps, because, you know, people don't think it looks pretty, you know, or whatever, when really, you know, there's something else that, that would be so beneficial to people. And then there are people who also are growing fish in tanks and having them circulate. We did this as a project at my school that I had for about 30 years where, you know, and they would, the way that they would propel the energy that they got to move the water for the fish was by hooking up a bicycle to a dryer motor, and then they'd pedal the bicycle, which would create the energy to move the water to then the tank that had the vegetables in it. And then the vegetables and the plants that were in there would actually clean the water, and then that water would move then back into the fish. So, there was, I wish I could remember his name. He was in Earth's Answer, this a book, and I just cannot remember this incredible person's name. But we did that as an experiment. It was wonderful. That's another thing. I think there needs to be a lot of solutions for a lot of different areas. I love this project that Carol and you and your team have put together. I think it's a fantastic idea. I totally support it, and I don't want for this conversation to be misunderstood. I certainly hope.
Oh, thank you. But also, I just have to. Okay, one more thing about putting your hands in the dirt.
Yeah.
Do you know about Mycobacterium vacca? Are you familiar with that?
No.
Okay, there's a bacterium that is found in the soil, and it's found in soils worldwide. And we have very, very good peer-reviewed research from around the planet that says within about 20 minutes of putting your hands in the dirt, this bacterium has entered your bloodstream, and it creates the same kind of changes. Serotonin levels will increase in the brain that Prozac causes. So when you are talking, when people go work outside and they feel good or they feel relaxed, it's biochemical. It isn't just getting in touch with earth spirits or something. There's an absolute, which says to me, we are supposed to be in relationship with dirt.
Right.
And we are supposed to be in relationship with the food that we grow. So it's one of my favorite bacterium stories. So.
Right. It's beautiful. It's also, you know, the mythology, which I love so much, and I know in all of great mythology is talking about how vital that connection to the earth is that we have, and even in the Van Eschenbach's telling of the Grail, you know, in that Western myth, you know, when he comes back with the Grail, he tells Arthur what he has forgotten is that he and the land are one. You and the land are one. That's what he's forgotten. That's what has caused all of this strife, you know. And I think, oh, you know, right back to their indigenous roots, you know. That's where we need to go to heal this rift.
You're absolutely right. It's one of the reasons why Carolyn is so emphasized we've got to bring children onto this farm. There has to be this major educational outreach component where the kids can come have a kinesthetic experience with the soil, with their food, which will make the whole learning experience very different.
Oh,
and
yeah.
I think that, you know, we are now into second and third and fourth generations of children who have no relationship with where their food is grown. And that's a disaster.
It is a disaster. I would love to talk to Carolyn again when you feel finished. The other really thrilling thing for me about this project is that in Montessori's idea for a school for especially the adolescents and the upper grades was that they had a farm.
Mm-hmm.
And that they did the farm, and then they reaped the benefits from the production of their farm, as well as in the kitchen, cooking the, you know, food from their farm. And so it's just beautiful the way it all connects. For me, it is anyway.
And I think it is just an amazing, it's a growth experience for children all the way through, from the very simple thing of pulling a rabbit out of the ground to perhaps getting into the hydrology, getting into what happens with soil water holding capacity, what happens with soil bacteria's ability to clean water as it moves down through the water table. I mean, there's just, it ranges from the very, very simple kinds of things that you can do with a preschool kindergarten child all the way up through the college classes that I teach, where I think every piece of it is equally rewarding and a very vital part of information that people have lost.
Oh, it is. It was John Todd. That was the person who had talked about
the aquaponic system.
Yes.
Were you growing tilapia or carp?
Well, you know, tilapia would be the favorite, but here in California, they wouldn't let you use tilapia. They were afraid it would escape. And then,
right.
You know, and so you had to do, was it a catfish? I think it was something like that, rather than the tilapia. I've heard that that might have been lifted. Tilapia was the favorite because it's a lot like halibut, so you could, or shellfish, you can, by seasonings, you can change the flavor, and, you know, that way. And so that's, I think, is why I was really excited about the tilapia. Oh, well, this has been so fun, and it's so darn exciting. Do you want to tell us some more, or shall I talk to Carolyn?
No, I'm going to pass this back to Carolyn. I want to apologize. I have work being done at my home, so if you hear tapping, they're putting down a floor right now. So here's Carolyn.
All right. I can't hear it on my end right now. If I hear it in the recording when I listen to it, I will certainly let you both know.
So, isn't my farm guru wonderful, amazing, and fascinating?
Welcome back, Carolyn. Yes, your farm guru is fabulous, but you are very fabulous. I was very impressed. Pardon?
Thank you. Yes, she's wonderful. Actually, Central San found her for me. Bethlehem has worked with the sanitary district for many years. She developed the integrated pest management program that has become the iconic example for the state and has been implemented by the University of California, Davis. See, I'm allowed to brag about her. She's not. And I actually had another organic farmer originally, but then Central San said, well, you really should talk to Bethlehem Black. And I just immediately added to her and subtracted the other person from my team. She's just the best.
Right. I understand, Carolyn, from something that you posted on Facebook, that Jack Appleton, who is the author of Values in Sustainable Development, a Rutledge Studies in Sustainable Development, has asked you to contribute a chapter on the Cocoa Sustainable Farm to his next book.
Yes, absolutely.
That is very exciting news.
Yes, it is. I told them I still don't have approval from the sanitary district. We've got conditional approval. We got 5 votes for the project and concept, but we don't have the final approval because we had to go through all sorts of hoops. There's an airport across the way. As a matter of fact, one of the things that is the most fascinating about the project is that it's in a heavy industrial zone, and to think that you could produce a huge amount of food for people who need it between an airport, sanitary district, Tesoro refinery nearby, and county quarries nearby, and some of the business people community are really amazed by that.
Carolyn, your voice is going in and out, so...
Sorry. So I said that it's in the middle of a heavy industrial district between an airport, a refinery, a county quarry, and the sanitary district. And so it just shows that we have pockets of land everywhere. But at any rate, this has created hurdles to overcome on a bureaucratic level.
Yes.
So that we had to go to the Airport Land Use Commission to make sure that they were going to find it acceptable for us to do what we're doing across from the airport. And, of course, we can't plant berries or fruit that attract birds because we don't want another situation like the Sully-Sullenberg situation where birds bring down a plane.
Right. Well,
so
is there something...
in an urban area, we have all sorts of hurdles to overcome that one might not need to overcome if you're out in the middle of farmland, but then wouldn't be that exciting if we were out in the middle of farmland. It would just be another farm.
Right. Well, in order to provide salads for schools in Contra Costa County, California, as well as all the good that it will do for the environment in terms of green jobs and all the other benefits that are involved, it's in process now. Is there anything our listeners can do to help you get the support you need to get this approval?
Absolutely. They could go to the Central Contra Costa Sanitary District website and send an email to the board members, and it could just be a paragraph or two, or it can be like three sentences saying that they think this is a fantastic and important project, that they hope that the sanitary districts in their area will replicate, or if they're in Central San district as a ratepayer, then it's good to say their address so they know, you know, who it is that's advocating. And just write a brief letter to advocate or go to www.change.org and type in COCO, that's one word, SAN, S-A-N, Sustainable Farm, and sign the petition. That's the simplest way to help, is to sign the petition on change.org and let the sanitary district know that this is something that they should be doing, because they're worried that the public will think this is, some of them are worried that the public won't like this. The more progressive and visionary members of the sanitary district board recognize that this is a prototype, and we already have two other sanitary districts who are just dying to follow us once we get up and running. So we can actually wipe out nutritional poverty in the county, if you can believe it, with just using the buffer land of the sanitary districts. I think there's 300 or 400 acres of buffer land among the sanitary districts in the county.
Yeah, it is huge, and it's so exciting. And I just hope that it gets all the support that it needs to get off the ground and get and up and running. And I hope that when you find out if it is up and running and it gets going, or if it gets turned down and why, that we can have you back on again to tell us, keep us up to snuff on the process. Because
absolutely. I think it will get approved. And so I'll be back on telling you what the next stages are. Of course, as soon as it gets approved, we have to raise money, and because we will be a self-sustaining, sustainable farm. We'll sell some of the produce. We're going to give away about 5 acres, and then we're going to sell at least 5 acres. And I've actually recently contacted two of the food service directors in local schools, one of which is outside the district, so they wouldn't be recipients of the free food, and they're interested in buying it for reduced prices. So they may not get it free, but they're happy to get it subsidized.
Right. Yeah, that sounds wonderful. And it's too bad, I don't know what they pay to have food brought into the schools, what they pay those vendors, but couldn't those vendors pay you for this produce and these salads instead of what they're providing now?
We could sell to the public, but I think the school districts are going to, probably take everything that we can produce. I didn't think that up until about a week ago, and then I went to an open house at one of the cafeterias for Pittsburgh Unified School District and talked to the food service director. And they're paying, you know, they pay close to market rates for lettuce and spinach. They're paying, you know, close to $3 a head and also very high prices for spinach. And I know we can get it to them for considerably less than that. And they would love to be able to put salad bars in every school. Tom Tillotson, State Superintendent of Public Instruction, is a huge supporter of this project and has written a very strong letter supporting it. He wants to put 1,000 salad bars in schools in the next year. And so projects that this project and the projects that emulate it will allow him to be able to afford that, because right now schools just can't afford to feed a kid a salad. It costs 35 cents to feed a child pizza and $1 a day to feed them salad. And we're not trying to take away their salad. We're just trying to subsidize it and get it down to maybe 20 cents so that the school districts can afford to add a salad to the menu.
Yeah, that sounds wonderful. That's what I was wondering, was about the vendors who provide the food to the schools.
Well, those are just normal wholesalers and retailers, and some of the salad that they're getting now up here is coming from Yuma, from all the way at the southern end of California, and so, you know, it gets to them a day or two after it's picked, so it's not
fresh. Oh, dear. It's not as nutritious.
It's not affordable.
Yeah, it sounds just terrible.
And you know, the Montiato School District has a very high poverty rate, food subsidy rate, and in the county there are school districts that are in the 20s in terms of how many of the kids get food subsidies. So these school districts are not super wealthy where they can afford, you know, get parents to donate $100,000 to have a salad bar or whatever they want. So our giving them subsidized produce will allow them to do something that they just can't do. And, you know, people talk about hunger as being the biggest problem, one of the biggest problems in the world. I think that's the wrong category. I think nutritional poverty is an even bigger category, because you can have enough calories. Of course, those kids don't have enough calories. I don't want to minimize that, and people. But you can have enough calories and still have nutritional poverty. And so you don't have the nutrients to grow strong bones and strong eyes and a good brain. And you set yourself up for a lifetime of medical problems. And we wonder why our medical costs in this country are so high. Well, we're feeding our kids garbage. It's one of the, you know, it sets them up for a lifetime of problems. So try to intervene and, you know, use wasted resources can really have just a huge impact. I've been working on this now for 2.5 years, so I'm getting pretty tired, but I'm still getting in there because it's so important.
Yeah. I know that Earth Island Institute is one of the sponsors of this project, right?
Yes. The Earth Island Institute is a spinoff from the Sierra Club. They are arguably the most prestigious environmental incubator in the world. They, early on, a group of people who started the Sierra Club realized that a lot of green entrepreneurs or environmental entrepreneurs didn't have that much interest in the business end and didn't actually have the knowledge to do the business end. And so the Earth Island Institute takes on about 50 projects at a time around the world, and usually they're in Africa or South America or some third world country. They took our project. And I had to go to them a week before the final vote to take our project and tell them I didn't have the approval of Central Fan yet. And I thought they were going to say, we'll come back next year. But they said, no, we're going to take your project. We think you're one of the most important projects that we're taking this year. And I said, really? And they said, well, you said it's replicable. And it is. It's replicable everywhere. And it just could make such a huge difference. It's one of those ideas that once you hear it, you think, well, somebody must have thought of this before. Somebody must have done this before. And recycled water is being used for agriculture, but buffer land, public buffer land and public water is not being used for the public good. And so, in the way we're describing. So anyway, so Earthbound Institute took us, and they provide all the business and the insurance, the accounting, the income taxes, the dealing with any kind of legal issues, the contracts. It takes a big burden off of me so that I can do the development part. Somebody said you're like a developer, and I thought that a little strange, so I asked the developer, and he said, yep, you're a developer. A developer goes in, they see something that could be done with land that isn't done, and then they pull it all together and make it happen. And, of course, you know, that's not the growing and that's not the teaching. That's the big structure part of it. And so it's nice to have the Earth Island Institute support, and they help you find funding and lots of other things, too.
That's wonderful.
And I received an email from them today suggesting a funding source. Won't work for me because I don't have the approval yet, but nonetheless, that's the kind of help that they give me.
Right.
Plus training.
And, well, they are a 501c3, aren't they, the Earth Island Institute?
Yes. We are a project of the Earth Island Institute. They are the 501c3 that we are under.
You're under their umbrella.
Yes, we are under their umbrella. We're literally the Earth Island Institute's project called Cocoa Sand Sustainable Farm.
Yes. It's wonderful. I thank you so much for this time, Carolyn. If there's anything else that you feel that the audience should know before we say goodbye, please tell me. And also,
well, I can think of one thing. The Contra Costa Council is a group of the most powerful business people and leaders and planners in the county, and they have 9 task forces. They have a transportation task force, business development, air quality, water, and they have the United Task Forces have unanimously voted to support this project. The board of directors unanimously voted. I didn't even tell Bethel on that. This last week. So that is very, very prestigious. They're going to send a letter to Central Sand saying that they think this project should go forward, that it's going to benefit the county on so many different levels that they're very excited. And they actually have some angel investors and that kind of brain power. Two people, Gary Kraft and someone else, who are helping me on the entrepreneurial side of things. And I also wrote a business plan, and JFK University had a business plan contest, so I sent my business plan to them. As a matter of fact, I wrote it for the contest, and because that deadline set me free. So I thought I'd use the deadline to make myself write a business plan. And anyway, I was a semi-finalist. So I got to semifinalist stage. So now I have to go give my pitch, my 3-minute pitch to them, and see if I don't know what resources it brings. I think it brings some free classes, but it's always fun to just get the word out there about the farm.
Oh, it is. It's just fabulous. It's fabulous. You should be very proud of yourself.
Thank you.
You're doing fabulous work. And you're doing you're doing it well. I also would like to ask you to send me the contact information about, you know, where you want, what you want people to do in order to support you, so that I can put it in the long promotion that will go out with the launch of this interview.
Okay.
Great.
That's fantastic.
Thank you so much for all you do and all your time. And I know that I told the listeners about your Facebook pages and how successful they are too. And I know that's just been fabulous. I think.
Well, thank you.
Yes, it's really wonderful. I myself adore Michelle Obama. And And, of course,
well,
what you're doing.
I should tell the listeners that I'm retired, so that I'm in my 60s. So they shouldn't think that when they retire, there's no life after retirement. I think that it's a time for the big visionary activities that you don't have time for when you're raising your kids and when you're working on your career.
I agree with you. I'm going to be 70 in September.
Well, there you go.
Thank you once again, Carol and Finney, for your work, for your time, and I just am so excited about this project. Shall I say goodbye to Bethelyn?
Yes.
Great.
Oh, okay. You know, I'm going to say goodbye to you. Thank you so much, Athena. I really appreciate the time and interest in our project, and here's Bethelyn.
Oh, it's been my pleasure.
So, again, thank you very much for this, for talking with us and giving us a chance to explain this wonderful project that we hope takes off soon.
Well, thank you, Bethelyn Black, for being my guest. You and Carol and Finney are just remarkable people. It's just nice to know that you're out there doing wonderful work for healing this planet and for the people and life on this planet.
Thank you, and good luck with those containers.
Okay. Bye-bye now.
Bye-bye.
Thank you to Carol and Finney and Bethelyn Black for your time and your energy. And all of you, be sure to check out the Coco Sand Sustainable Farm Facebook group page. And if you would like to contact the Coco Sand Sustainable Farm, their email address is sustainablefarm@comcast.net. And please take action to support Salads for Schools and the Food Bank in Contra Costa County, California, by going to www.change.org in the petitions and look for Salads for Schools, the Food Bank. That's change.org/petitions/salads-for-schools-the-food-bank. The website for Earth Island Institute is www.earthisland, that's earthisland.org. You can listen and download free anytime at the website. And please join us on the Education Now Facebook page or our Google Plus page to leave comments and join the conversation. On Thursday, April 11th, Sean Johnson joins us on Education Now for a report on the opt-out national march on the Department of Education in Washington, D.C., which is taking place April 4th through April 7th. Education Now is a production of the Hermeneutic Institute for Holistic Health and Education. Education Now podcasts are listed on the American Montessori Society website at www.amshq.org in the local events pages. I'm sending cosmic love to you all. This is Athena Melville saying goodbye for now.
Who are on the road must have a code that you can live by, and so become yourself, because the past is just a goodbye. Teach your children well, their father's hell did slowly go by, and feed them on your dreams, the one they picked, the one you know.